Good evening. We're going to go ahead and get started. I'm running a little bit late, but my name's Robert Burns. I'm the chair of the Northern Regional Advisory Council. We'll go around and we'll have introductions. If Paul, you'd start.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, Jim's hiding, so.
Yeah. Would you blame me? Jim Gaskill from South Weber. I represent Public at Large.
Paul Cowley, I represent the Forest Service.
Craig Van Tassel, Sportsman.
John Blazard, Agriculture.
John Leonard, Sportsman.
Bruce Hilltop, Bureau of Land Management.
Bryce Thurgood, Perry, Utah, at Public at Large.
R. Jeffrey Hicks, at large.
Chris Purdy, non-consumptive, from Ogden.
John Wall, Riverdale. Public at large.
And Justin Doling, I'm the regional supervisor, and I serve as the executive secretary, and I'm a non-voting member.
And again, I'm Robert Burns. I represent the public at large. We do have one member who's excused tonight, the vice chair. He's out of the country, John Cavett. So John Wall is going to assist me in keeping time and trying to keep me on task. Our purpose here tonight is to take public comment on the proposals on our agenda. We'll make a recommendation to the Wildlife Board, and they will set the rules. They set policy in the state of Utah for wildlife. Our procedure will be that there will be a presentation, then we'll have questions from the public, then we'll have questions from the council members. Then we'll have comments from the public. If you wish to comment, please fill out a blue card and hand it in up here. Jody will get it down to me. If you're representing yourself, I'll give you 3 minutes. If you need a little bit of extra time and you're representing yourself, I'll give you up to 5 minutes if you need it. But if you're representing a group, we'll typically give you 5 minutes. We've heard most of what's on the agenda tonight before, so hopefully we can get through it without going over it too much. After the comments from the public's participation is completed. We'll have comments from the RAC. Then we'll have motions from the council members. We'll deliberate those motions, and then we'll have a vote. So there is no changes to the agenda. Chair would entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I move that we approve the agenda as presented.
Is there a second?
A second.
We have a motion from Paul Cowley and a second from Craig Van Tassel to approve the agenda for the September 18th, 2013 Northern Regional Advisory Council meeting. All in favor, please raise your hands and say aye.
Aye. Aye.
It's unanimous. Hopefully you had time to read the Wildlife Board meeting update. I sent it to you a little bit late. I was having a hard time getting the summary of motions. So there was one thing on there that I think they'll be changing. It said transplant 200 goats to the LaSalles, and it should have said the population objective would be 200 goats. So they transplanted 20 goats. Other than that, they agreed with our recommendations, and they did move the youth waterfowl hunt opener to the 21st. Any questions on the Wildlife Board's actions? John?
We made a recommendation on the cougar policy or rule to include to work with the landowners to see if they couldn't solve some of those depredation problems. Any discussion or action taken on that?
Can you comment on that? I'm not sure that the Wildlife Board specifically discussed it, but I'm sure they're aware of the problems we're having in the northern region.
Yeah, I'm going off memory, but I don't believe the Wildlife Board even addressed that. There was some discussion with John Shivick, the program coordinator, and I know John indicated that there's some sensitivity to trying to be more cooperative, and he had a slide that talked about that. And I don't know if it was a result of comments that came out of this meeting or not, but John has plans to go back and tweak the plan a little bit, and I think that was one of the things he was going to look at. And so I think that may have ended any discussion that the board had at that point, if my memory's right.
It was a very long meeting, especially at the Wildlife Board. I think we finished at 5 or 6 o'clock after starting at 9. So things that were discussed kind of escaped my memory, a lot of it. But I can specifically ask John about that if you'd like me to.
Well, I think that was a very important points that were made at the RAC by the landowners involved, and I think that needs following up on and action.
Yeah.
And I guess we were under the impression that the division had some potential remedies and that they were going to sit down and negotiate and apply to those specific landowners.
Yeah, I think they addressed part of that in the discussion, and part of what we talked about in our meeting in his presentation about having landowner tags, I think they were specific tags for livestock operators to address problem cougar. That was adopted, so I think that's going to be a new tool for them to use.
Okay.
I did forget to say that. Oh, go ahead, Jim.
Well, I was just going to say that we've got some new members of the Wildlife Board, and maybe it would be a good idea to remind them that although we don't make policy, if they don't agree with our recommendations, they need to explain why in writing. And of course, that was not a recommendation, more of a suggestion. But still, it kind of upsets us when we have a long discussion and come to a compromise agreement, and then somehow it gets dropped in the Wildlife Board. So, I think something needs to be followed up. I agree with John.
Well, we do have a new Wildlife Board chair and vice chair, which I haven't recognized yet. It's a good thing you reminded me. But in the past, the Wildlife Board has responded that their policy on how to reply to any changes or any situation where they voted differently than we had voted is that the official minutes of the Wildlife Board are the response to any differences as far as how they voted and we voted. So I won't get those. Won't actually be available. There'll be a draft version out, but the final approved minutes won't be out until they approve them at their next meeting, too. So,
okay. I have my say.
Okay. Yeah. I did need to comment that Jody said the mics are not super sensitive tonight, so we need to make sure we all speak into the microphone to get it on the record. And I'd ask the public, when they're using the microphone, to please speak into the microphone so that we can get that on our audio recording for the record. I did fail to recognize Bill Fenimore, who is on the Wildlife Board, lives in the northern region, and he is the vice chair of the Wildlife Board. Nice to have you here tonight, Bill. Lynn, you could introduce yourself, too. We've been around through that.
I'm Lynn Nelson. I'm the elected official on the board, and My apologies for being late.
Oh, you're fine. Thank you. So with that, we'll go to the regional update.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been a while since I've given you a regional update, and we've had a lot of personnel changes. So as I go through the different sections, I'll touch upon some of those changes. Derek Wilcox is our new accounting tech in the administrative section, so he works there at the front desk and also in our accounting portion of the region. He's replaced Vicki Summers, who was promoted into our Salt Lake office. And then Shauna Mosier is our new office specialist, and she replaced Phil Gray, who was also promoted into our Salt Lake office. For law enforcement, we've had a fair amount of turnaround here recently and some changes that have occurred, so I wanted to review those with you. We have a new officer now in the North Cache. His name is Chris Schultz. Chris came to us from the southern region. I believe he was working out of the St. George area. And then Brandon Barron, who was the conservation officer out of Davis County, has now moved to West Box Elder, and he's living in Corinne. And then Brent Kaza is a conservation officer that will be coming up and replacing Bruce Johnson, who was promoted to lieutenant in the central region. And Brent, if I remember correctly, comes from the Richfield area. And the last change is Devin Christensen. And Devin comes from Emory County, and Devin will be the Weber officer replacing Dave Beveridge, who promoted to sergeant. And so Brent will be starting on the 28th of September, and Devin will be here around the middle of October. For a wildlife section, we've got a planned goat transplant from Willard Peak, and that transplant will occur just after the season ends, so the target dates for that transplant are the 14th, 15th, and the 16th. If you have an interest in joining us on any one of those days, to the RAC members, you're more than welcome to come up and participate in that transplant. These animals will be going to the Dutton, and we have plans to take about 30 animals off of Willard. This year, our wildlife section will be sampling chronic wasting disease from mule deer in units 2, 3, and 4. Unit 2 is our cache unit. Unit 3 is our Ogden unit. And unit 4 is the Morgan South Ridge. So if you harvest a deer in one of those units and want to have it sampled, you could check into our check stations or come into the regional office and we can take a sample for you. The wildlife section is also putting finishing touches on the Hardware Ranch elk trap. That trap was in disrepair and needed a lot of work, and the guys have been trying to finish that trap up. Wanted to remind everybody of the youth hunts that are coming up. We have an upland game and waterfowl youth hunt this Saturday. And so if you've got a young hunter that wants to get out in the field, I'd encourage you to go do that. They're a great time and a good experience. This year we'll also be releasing a fair number of pen-reared birds, a lot of chuckers, and a ton of pheasants. So keep your eye on our website and our news releases, and we'll give folks an idea of where those birds will be released. But we have plans to release over 1,000 pheasants here in the region. So should be good for the pheasant hunters. In our outreach section, the outreach folks have hired a wildlife technician to help kind of start this new wildlife recreation program that the agency is developing. This technician will be involved in the community fisheries program and also probably some satellite programs, and it's just a way to kind of bridge over until we can finally get that program up and running at the state level. In our habitat section, we've had several big fires here in the region, the Rockport Fire, Millville Face, State Line and Devil's Playground out in West Box Elder, and our habitat folks are working to try to get together and pull together seed mixes and make arrangements for those fires to be reseeded before winter hits. They've also been working with UDOT, and I don't know if you drive between Brigham City and Logan, but on Highway 89 you'll be seeing some new escape ramps, and Highway 89 is fenced on both sides to keep deer out. Occasionally, they do get inside the fenced right-of-way, and these escape ramps allow the deer to cleanly exit over the fence, and so you'll see some of that construction going on. In our aquatic sections, we have a couple of personnel changes. We hired a new aquatic invasive species biologist, Sarah Siegert, and she came from, I want to say, the Great Lakes region. Is that right, Paul? Okay. And Sarah has replaced Phil Tuttle, who was promoted to the native species biologist in the region. So it's good to have Sarah on board, and I believe our aquatic section is fully staffed at this point. The aquatic guys are working on a treatment on Johnson Creek. It's a stream in West Box Elder County that holds a Yellowstone cutthroat, and so they'll be doing that treatment the 23rd and the 24th of September. It's a real small tributary, but it's important to the recovery strategy for the stabilization strategy for that particular fish species. They're also they have some grow out ponds for June sucker out near Rosette, or little south of Rosette. And these grow-out ponds for June sucker are designed to raise June sucker, which are an endangered fish to Utah Lake. And then they go out, gather these fish up, and then augment the populations there in Utah Lake. And they'll be transferring those later in the month. They'll also be gill netting Willard Bay the week of the 7th and the 14th of October, either one of those weeks, depending on weather and conditions. And they just finished up their second treatment of the right-hand fork of the Logan River, and they'll be looking at stocking Bonneville cutthroat back into that stretch around the middle of October. As far as good fishing this time of the year, they report that the weavers should really start to pick up as temperatures cool and water flows stabilize. The fishing on the weavers should pick up, and most of the reservoirs should also pick up as temperatures decrease. So that's all I had, unless anybody has any questions.
Was the fire in Blacksmith Fork, was it close to the Hardware Ranch? Or?
The Millville Phase Fire? Or the one that just recently happened, like last night? Yeah, it was in Cottonwood Canyon. I'm not sure how close it was, but it was a 20-acre grass fire, and it didn't impact operations at the ranch.
Thank you, Justin. I need to get back on my track on my agenda here. You should have received the minutes of our August 7th, 2013 meeting. Were there any amendments that the council wanted to make to those minutes? Seeing none, the chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of August 7th, 2013 meeting.
So moved.
Is there a second, Jim? So we have a motion from John Blazard and a second from Jim Gaskell to approve the minutes of the August 7th, 2013 Northern Regional Advisory Council meeting. All in favor, please say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
It's unanimous. So we don't get to get Drew up here tonight. We're going to have Paul come up and give the presentation for fishing guidebook and rule.
What do I need to do? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Birdsey. I'm the Coldwater Sport Fish Coordinator with the Division of Wildlife Resources, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to present this tonight. I'd like to recognize Drew Cushing, the Warm Water Coordinator. We've worked together on various issues throughout the year. And then the regional staff that's here, Paul Thompson and Chris Penny, I think that's everybody. And with that, let's get right into it. The aquatic staff of the Division of Wildlife Resources spends a lot of time throughout the year getting input from the public. We do that through meeting face-to-face with people, attending various angler group meetings, attending Utah Angler Coalition meetings at least once a month, Blue Ribbon Fisheries Advisory Council also about once a month. And then the big things that we do are open houses that are held in the spring throughout the state, which we present ideas to the public. We also do a lot of listening, and from those we start to develop some ideas for regulation changes. Those regulation changes are then put out to the public in an online survey. This year ran from May 10th to June 10th. We asked 8 questions as part of that regarding possible regulation changes, and 1 question on a management direction at Schofield Reservoir. There was also space provided at the end of that survey for free form comments. People could tell us what they like, what they don't like, or any suggestions for other regulation changes that they would like to see. From that survey, we had a total of 1,158 people participate. First item from that survey that was actually an action item from the Wildlife Board last year, November of last year, the Wildlife Board directed us to investigate the possibility of increasing the possession limit from 1 to 2 days. Right now, in the state of Utah, there's a daily limit, and then there's a possession limit, which is also 1 day. So theoretically, if you go camping, you catch a limit of fish, you cannot go out fishing again the next day until you consume some of those fish. After talking with our aquatics managers, members of the public, and others, we developed 3 alternative approaches to change this possession limit. And these alternatives were included on our statewide angler survey. And these are the results. First alternative was a 2-day possession limit for all species. Second was a 2-day possession limit for warm and cool water species. And the third was a no change in the possession limit. And I want to emphasize for the discussion tonight that what we're talking about is a possession limit in the field. So on the survey, we got about 51 or 52% of people that favored the 2-day possession limit for all species, around 15% or so that favored it for the just the warm and cool water species, and 36% that said that they wanted no change in the possession limit. These are not real clear direction from the public, but if you do combine the first 2 alternatives, it looked like the public in general wanted some change. So we took that, we developed the following regulation proposal. In addition to 1 legal daily limit of unprocessed fish, that is freshly caught fish, a person may possess 1 additional limit of processed fish. And in this instance, processed means to be filleted, to be gutted, to be somehow reduced to something other than a fresh-caught fish. Caught during the previous day, provided that they are within the legal limit of fish species and water body where the angler is fishing. The only exceptions to this rule are Strawberry Reservoir and Flaming Gorge, where you may only possess or only have 1 daily limit in your possession. And the reason for this is that Strawberry is extremely heavily used. We are concerned that there is a potential for overharvest and threaten the very delicate balance that's been put together at Strawberry since the treatment in 1990. We also had a Strawberry Anglers Association come out in opposition to including strawberry in this rule. So we decided that what we would do is carefully ease into this, look at some other waters, and see what impacts may result from a two-day possession limit, and then perhaps in the future go forward with the inclusion of strawberry into this. The other part of that is Flaming Gorge. We co-manage Flaming Gorge Reservoir with Wyoming Game and Fish. They are on a two-year proclamation cycle, of which this is the first year. They do not have a two-day possession limit in their proclamation. We do not want to get out of sync with them. So what we are suggesting there is that we will attempt to work with Wyoming, and as they move forward with their regulations, which will next be due in 2015, we will try and sync our regulation with theirs so that we are all on the same page with the two-day possession limit. Underwater spearfishing. This is another action item from the Wildlife Board. It directed us to review the underwater spearfishing rule with an eye to providing more opportunities to spear fishermen. We developed a group, a relatively large group at first, which was then narrowed down to about three representatives of spear fishermen and three representatives from regular hook and line anglers. We met a couple more times after that. We developed a compromise. It was sent out to the larger group. And it is a contentious issue, a lot of emotions on both sides, very passionate people in their sport. But I really want to thank Terry Reist, George Summer, a multitude of other people that helped out with this and were able to come up with what we believe is a pretty fair compromise that takes into account the protection of the resource and at the same time provides additional opportunity. So we put this on the survey also. About 70% of the respondents were in favor of the proposal. And this is the proposal. Lengthen the season to year-round. The waters on the left, they can spear any game fish within the same daily and possession limits as applicable for that water. The ones in yellow are new opportunities. The ones in white were previously offered to spear fishermen. The ones on the right are also year-round except for a closure to the take of black bass, largemouth and smallmouth, from April 1st to the 4th Sunday or Saturday in June, and this is to protect fish when they're on their nest spawning. Again, the ones in yellow are new opportunities. In addition to that, we propose the closing of Jordanelle Reservoir. This is one that this fishery has some issues, and it was just felt that closing it to spearfishing at this time would be a good move. And also Lost Creek Reservoir to take of by spearfishing. Lost Creek in 2012 was moved to a slot limit similar to Strawberry, Schofield, and Panguitch, and actually should have been taken off the spearfishing list at that time. It was just an inadvertent oversight that we're attempting to correct at this time. And just as a reminder, everybody, carp may be taken in any water statewide with an open fishing season. So, okay, this one's a little bit difficult to understand, but I'm going to try and just hit the high points here. The Wildlife Board has the opportunity to designate a certain species in certain waters as a catch-and-kill species. These are primarily species that have been illegally introduced and are unwanted in those waters. In 2013 legislative session, the Division of Wildlife Resources asked the sponsor to propose a bill to make what had previously been considered wasting of those particular species legal. And the reason for this is that we want people to take them. Prior to the change in that law, they had to be used for what was designated as a beneficial use. That was primarily human consumption. So we asked that we be allowed to just dispose of those fish in other ways. And in a recommendation from this RAC last year when we first started talking about this is that we were asked to put together a list of how people may dispose of those fish. So we developed 5 alternatives, and these are recommendations. They're not actually part of the rule. So the first is that they could be disposed of in the water where they were caught, buried on the shoreline of the water where the fish were caught, fish cleaning station, the angler's place of residence, or another location designated by laws to be appropriate for disposal. So, these are the species and the locations that we're asking that these fish be allowed to be disposed of. In all waters statewide, common carp, Blue Lake tilapia, Deer Creek Reservoir, white bass, black bullhead, Flaming Gorge burbot, Grantsville Reservoir smallmouth bass, Lake Powell striped bass, Red Fleet Reservoir walleye, Utah Lake northern pike. Those are all illegal introductions with the exception of striped bass and Lake Powell. They just simply get overabundant at some times, outrun their forage supply. We'd like people to continue to take them even though they may not be suitable table fare at some point in time. In addition to those, we want to be able to include burbot, northern pike, smallmouth bass, and walleye in the Green River main stem, Colorado, and San Juan rivers, and the Green River, Colorado, and San Juan tributaries as they're listed here. Again, these fish present a threat to the endangered fish and native fish in those systems, and we would like them to be removed by anglers where possible. Okay, moving on. In addition to the disposal, of course, we then want to be able to implement a catch and kill for those fish. And it's a little bit misleading in this slide, and I apologize. It's not actually a catch and kill for channel catfish in this system. It's actually just a no limit. So it's up to the angler's discretion whether they keep them or whatever. But on the other species, burbot, northern pike, smallmouth bass, or walleye, they may not be released. There was about 90% support in the survey for the regulation. And we want to include the same tributaries and main stem rivers in that catch and kill and in that no limit. And this is as much as anything for consistency, because right now, and clarity, right now if you happen to be fishing on the Green River at the confluence with Range Creek, for example, and you fish in the main stem of the Green River, you have a catch and kill on smallmouth bass. However, if you turn to the right slightly, start fishing into Range Creek, you catch a fish in that water, you're subject to the same limit as the statewide limit of 6. So this is just for consistency there. And this rule would not include the tributary or the reservoirs or waters in those drainages that we manage for those species. For example, Starvation Reservoir, we manage for walleye and smallmouth bass. It would not be part of this discussion. So there's the waters in the Green River, and these are in the Colorado River and San Juan River. And moving on into specific regional recommendations, Bryan Head Pond, Small Pond, and Iron County. They'd like to make that a community fishery, and we want to apply the standard 2 fish community fishery rule to that. We have had in the past several waters in the southern region that were that boats or boats with motors were not allowed. Those were mistakenly dropped from the proclamation a few years ago because we were trying to simplify things and move these responsibilities over to parks. Unfortunately, they didn't necessarily keep the information current, so we just want to bring these back into our rule and add them back in. So these are where boats and float tubes are prohibited. It's Aspen Mirror Lake, Kane County, Duck Springs Lake, Kane County, and Pine Valley Reservoir in Washington County. And similarly, we have five waters in the southern region where you can have a float tube, for example, but you cannot have a motor of any kind, gas or electric. Anderson Meadow Reservoir, Barney Lake, Boulder Mountain Lakes, except for those three, and then Little Reservoir in Beaver County. Staying in the southern region, currently chumming is allowed in Lake Powell, only in Lake Powell, and only with anchovies. This was a little bit confusing to people because in Lake Powell you can use sucker meat, for example, as a legal bait, but you cannot chum with it. So what we're recommending is that you can chum with any legal bait in Lake Powell, just, again, for simplification. Northeast region, Kern Creek, a small creek in Wasatch County, want to increase the limit from 2 to 4. It doesn't get much pressure. The region's hoping that if we increase the limit there, a few more people will run to fish there. Red Fleet Reservoir in Uinta County, this currently has a no limit for walleye. We want to change that to a no limit with a catch and kill. We could not do this before we had the wasting statute because there is a mercury advisory on walleye in Red Fleet Reservoir, and it was not, didn't seem appropriate for us to tell people that you had to keep them when the only way that they could dispose of them legally was to eat them, when it may in fact have been hazardous to their health to do so. Central region, Wasatch Mountain State Park Pond, again, it's been managed more or less as a community fishery. We just want to make that official and add the 2-fish limit there. Central region, again, Yuba Reservoir, for about the past year, we've been working with a group of anglers, water users, and others to put together a management plan for the reservoir. One of the issues there is an overabundance of northern pike. We would like to increase the limit there to 20 from the current 10. But make one of those only over 36 inches, and this is in an effort to retain the trophy aspect to that fishery while reducing the numbers of the small 20-inch hammer handles that are currently there. Moving into northern region here, again, Lost Creek Reservoir had the slot limit imposed in 2012. Another oversight as part of that was that other waters with the slot limit, you are not allowed to fillet the fish or remove the heads or tails prior to transporting those fish. And we're just trying to correct that oversight and bring it into line with those other waters. State Line Reservoir in Summit County has a kokanee population. We would like to protect those fish. So we want to close the possession of kokanee salmon with any red color from August 15th to 6 a.m. on the last Saturday of September. Over 90% of the people on the survey supported this. Willard Bay Reservoir and Inlet Channel. Right now, Willard Bay does have gizzard shad in it. Gizzard shad, commercially prepared, preserved gizzard shad are legal bait in every other water in the state except for Willard Bay. We want to allow commercially prepared gizzard shad to be available as a bait in that reservoir. They still cannot possess them alive or dead unless they're in this commercially prepared state. We have several waters in the northern region that have native fish concerns in them. You currently can harvest bait out of those waters with a cast net or whatever. Want to change that so that carp are the only legal non-game fish that can be taken out of these waters. And that would be Raft River in Box Elder County, Weber River, and Yellow Creek in Summit County. Southeast Region Electric Lake, this is a brand new kokanee introduction. We just put them in there this spring. It'll be a couple years before we start to see them return to the creel, but when they do, we want to protect them when they're spawning, and so we're proposing the same rule as in State Line Reservoir. And again, over 90% support on the survey. And similarly for the Electric Lake tributaries, again, over 90% support. Snagging, there has been some confusion in the past with the definition or lack thereof of exactly what constituted snagging. So what we're attempting to do is we've looked at definitions from other states and how they put it, and we're attempting to just clean that up, make it easier for our law enforcement folks to enforce. It says it's unlawful to intentionally snag or attempt to snag any fish. Fish hooked anywhere other than the mouth must be released immediately. And then the definition is snag means to hook a fish elsewhere than in the mouth. The only exception to this rule is at Bear Lake for Bonneville Cisco. I just have one or a couple quick slides here on some informational stuff. We talked about one of the other questions that we asked was about a management direction change at Schofield. In 2005, the division discovered Utah chubs in the reservoir. We added tiger trout to try and control the chubs in there. And in 2009, we added Bear Lake cutthroat trout as an additional predator. Rainbow trout, their condition and then their numbers and apparently their survival have continued to decline in the reservoir over the past few years. We asked people if they would be okay if we stopped stocking rainbow trout in there and instead added more Bear Lake cutthroat trout as a control for the chubs. And this is part of a recommendation that was came from a Utah State University study that's in the process of being wrapped up right now on the reservoir. 90% of the respondents were in favor of the change, and that really surprised us somewhat because the species that's most sought by Utah anglers is the rainbow trout. So we will be moving forward with this management direction change beginning in 2014. I know there's been a lot of discussion in this RAC in the past about opening of Willard Bay Inlet Channel. You've seen this before about how studies have shown it doesn't it adversely impact the walleye fishery, presents an additional angling opportunity. I do want to talk about point number three here for just a second, supported by a majority of anglers at Willard Bay. And I just kind of want to brief you on how that survey was done. The online survey, which I discussed here a few minutes ago, that is a survey that there simply was a link posted on our website. Anybody could answer that, and there was no control, relatively little control of how many times you answered that particular survey. But we have no way of developing statistics on that. It's not a scientifically designed survey. The one for Willard Bay, however, was a scientifically designed, statistically valid survey where we selected emails for 20,000 people that live in Cache, Weber, Box Elder, and Davis counties, which are previous creel surveys have shown are the major sources of fishermen at Willard Bay. And they were all sent an email. From that, we received about 950 responses memory serves me correctly. And of that 950, about 325 of them said that they fished Willard Bay in either 2012 or 2013. Just for perspective, we did an identical type of survey for Utah Lake in 2012, looking at bass regulations there. We sent out 20,000 emails. We received about 3,600 responses to that, of which around 1,500 or 1,600 people said that they fished Utah Lake. So I'm not quite sure what to say about the Willard Bay fishery, other than we sent out a lot of emails, got very little response there. I understand that there's a lot of passion, but those are the numbers. Of the people that replied to the email, we asked them what was their preferred species that they fished for. And I want to pull this out so I make sure I get these numbers correct here. About 45% of them said that they fished for wipers. 31% said that they fished for pretty much anything that got on the end of their hook. 18% fished for walleye. So you can do the math. About 70 people of the 325 were walleye fishermen out of that survey. So the rest of these I think you've already seen. So with that, I will take any questions.
Thank you, Paul. Questions from the public on Paul's presentation. If you have a question, come up to the mic. We've got a guy right there, and then you can be right after him. Please state your name, and then be sure to talk into the mic.
My name is John Overdeek. Okay. I live in Riverdale. And for all of you that don't know me, I'm Ducks Overdeeks. You pronounce my name Overdeek. Anyway, I'd like to ask you, that you're eradicating tilapia. I eat them at Riverdale Civic Center quite often.
Yes.
They're good fish.
That is correct.
They're damn tasty. Why the hell don't we make a law saying that anybody wants to net them, take them home? Eat them. Okay.
John, questions, okay?
Is that a question?
Ask him questions.
Okay. Why can't that law be amended and make some kind of a Creole update toward that? Can we do that?
I'm sorry, I'm a
tilapia,
little bit...
can't they be put in as a desirable fish?
Tilapia present a huge environmental risk to the ecosystems in the state of Utah because of that. I agree. I eat them every time I go to Red Lobster. They're delicious, but they also do not belong in the state of Utah, so we would like them removed.
May I ask why?
Because they present a huge environmental risk.
Because they only eat plankton, correct?
They eat at a very low level. They reproduce very quickly, and they can outcompete and present a threat to native species.
And just exactly like the gizzard shad, sir?
Is there an
association?
Gizzard shad were...
Is there an association with tilapia and gizzard shad? Is
no.
there an association?
No, they're different.
Guess what? Either one of them I can't catch with a hook. So I tell you what, a gizzard shad, I have foul hook,
John,
4 pounds.
John.
Yes.
Ask him questions about the presentation, please.
Right. Okay, you, a question on your first presentation. You had 1,158 people in a survey. I went with Mr. Morkin to the wildlife. Paul Draymond was there. I was never made aware of your spring presentation of what was published in the newspaper yesterday. Can you enlighten what took place at that particular spring meeting of how Mr. Drew Cushing's presentation that was published in the paper today, can you enlighten dates, names, and how it was presented?
I don't have that information in my fingertips.
Okay, thank you. Okay. 70% survey data, please. Could you give me some information of when this survey was conducted, by who, and who adjudicated it, that particular 70% data?
For the online survey?
Yes.
Or for the Willard Bay survey?
No, online.
The online survey was run from May 10th to June 10th of this year. It was the link to it was posted on several forums. It was presented in multiple news releases, and it was available through our website on www.wildlife.utah.gov.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I have an understanding of the word confluence in your presentation. Confluence to the Colorado. Does that include Sheep Creek and Cataract Canyon?
Those are main stem. Cataract Canyon is a main stem of the Green River, yes.
Yes, and not Green River, the Colorado River, sir.
Oh, correction. Sorry, you're right, Colorado
and
River.
And guess what? Can somebody misconstrue that rule in relationship to confluences? When the Colorado River runs from the mouth of the Colorado River it runs 22 miles from height on the Overpass River. It runs east and west. And what my concern is, that I have caught walleye clear as long as my leg there, and I've caught every kind of fish imaginable there. So if somebody says those two canyons are part of the Colorado River and a confluence, can they do whatever they want there? Or how can I interpret this?
You need to understand that what we present here is a simplified version of the rule. The actual rule will have a mile marker from the, I believe what we've discussed is the height bridge upstream to state line, and then the various tributaries are designated from the confluence with whatever river that they get to up to whatever management water may or may not exist on that particular water. For Nine Mile Creek, for example, there are no management waters, so it would be all of Nine Mile Creek. Range Creek's the same way, but the Strawberry River or the Duchesne would have specific designations as to where that catch and kill ends.
Okay, my last question, sir, is this. Please bear with me. It may or may not be a question. Please
question.
Bear with me. Please, RAC board members, please. In the 80s...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
In the 80s, in 1980...
Yes.
I went up the Colorado River. Mother Nature at 11 days of below zero temperature. The walls are 800 feet high. The sun is in that location. There was no wind. In 11 days, we had temperatures below zero. 100,000 tons of shad died because the water temperature fell below 41 degrees. Is that why we're making all the presentations in relationship to catch and kill? That is my question to you, sir. Can you answer that?
I'm completely unfamiliar with what you're talking about, so I apologize. But the catch and kill has to do with illegally introduced species or species that were legally introduced by management agencies, such as smallmouth bass into Elkhead Reservoir, Colorado, which escaped during the floods of the 1980s into the Green River. They've become very populous in there, and they present threats to the endangered fish. The Fish and Wildlife Service spends hundreds of thousands of dollars every year to try and mechanically remove those species. It seems, as a good partner, that we should also work towards bringing anglers in as part of that equation.
I totally agree with your assumption there. I think it's wonderful, I think it's correct, and I think it's accurate. But my whole intent for bringing this up is this. If you don't have any bait, you can't feed fish. Thank you.
Paul Roberts from Brigham City. Classifying burbot, even though it's a weed fish, it's unfortunately also a highly desirable table fish, and maybe we need to work out convincing people to eat them, or maybe have the stores there buy them from you for a package of potato chips or something, and then enter them into the restaurant trade. Snagging.
Paul?
Yeah. Question?
Questions. So right now we have questions on the presentation.
I'm asking why we're putting the burbot into a carp category.
You could ask him that as a form of a question. He could probably answer it.
Okay. Yeah. Why are we putting burbot into the same category
as
carp?
The basic reason is that it's an illegally introduced fish. It would be difficult to have some kind of barter or sale system set up, since it is against the law, to commercially sell wildlife. So from that standpoint also the state of Wyoming just implemented a mercury advisory on burbot in their portion of Flaming Gorge Reservoir. So again, that becomes a question of human health versus our desire to manage the reservoir. But in terms of our promotion of people taking burbot, we participate in the so-called burbot bash every year. We do lots of things to try and promote people to take burbot.
Yeah, thank you. That explains it. Snagging. A lot of times when you snag them, you'll hook them in the eye or somewhere like that, and releasing them just means the fish is going to die in the pond. Is there some kind of exemption that's possible there?
The key word in that rule is that intentionally snag. Now, there obviously are unintentional foul hooks also. For the most part, you should release those fish. In fact, you should always release those fish regardless of whether they're going to live or die as a result of that foul hooking. I'm certain that there is officer discretion involved, too, that, you know, I can't predict how a particular officer would deal with it. Something that was an unintentional snag in the eye or wherever, and you felt like that fish was not going to survive anyway. Okay. But that's entirely up to the officer.
Yeah. The email list, where was that derived? Are the license applications requiring email addresses now?
The ones that are purchased online do require an email address, and that's where that list was derived, was from our license sales database.
Okay, thank you.
One more question on burbot. You have $500 implants in burbots. Would you give us an update of how you made a locality of study in relationship where they spawn? Have you followed them, tracked them? Can you give me an objective of the money of $500, how it was well spent, and how it created an adversary position of killing burbot, sir?
I have not seen the results of that survey or that study as of yet. I think it's still ongoing. It was supposed to be for a couple of years. So I will attempt to find out and report back to the RAC, but right now I don't have an answer for you.
Hey, Terry.
My name's Jerry Reese. With regard to the multiple day possession limits or multiple possession limits over multiple days, let's say, as an example, that I go to starvation and I catch six walleye, and all I want to do is gut them and put them on ice. Will that qualify as being filled processed, or do I have to fillet them in order to be able to possess two limits?
No, that would qualify as field processing. One of the things that we have to work out that's come out as a result of the rec tour here is that Drew and I clearly understood what we meant when we said processed in that slide. However, what we understood as going out and meeting with the public is that that's a very unclear term. We have to come up with a very clear definition. But what you've just described would certainly fall into the realm of processed fish.
Thank you. I know you've been asked that question a few times during this process, but I just was curious.
One more question, sir. Possession limit.
John, get up to the microphone.
Okay, one more question on possession limit. You made two exclusions. Strawberry and flaming gourds. I have major concerns about Willard Bay. Major.
Question?
And the question is, sir, if we, as a body of fishermen, suggest we have a limit of three wipers and three walleye as a combination for that catching fish, can we incorporate Willard Bay as an exception?
That would be carried forward as a recommendation from this RAC to the Wildlife Board then, if the RAC chooses to adopt that as a recommendation. It would then be up to the Wildlife Board on November 7th to do with what they do at that point in time. We would not make that proposal at this time. It would have to come from the public and through the RAC.
My name's Trevor Earle. I live in Ogden, Utah. My question...
Trevor, we couldn't quite get your name very well.
Trevor Earle.
Great.
Sorry, a little taller than the last guy. My question is on the catch and kill with the burbot. What kind of numbers can a specific area of water sustain as far as dead floating fish? The reason why I ask is because I'm personal friends with a guide at Flaming Gorge. And he goes out starting this October, and he's averaging 200 fish a night. Now, a lot of these fish with the high mercury, advisories and everything like that, a very small percentage of the fish that his clients catch actually make it to the table.
Right. That recommendation for being returned to the water where they were caught was to puncture the air bladder, mm-hmm. put them back into the water so that they sink, so you do not, in fact, have a nice trail of dead fish following your boat there. For a reservoir such as Flaming Gorge, where it's got high nutrient loading from the Green River, Black Fork River, the amount of nutrients that might be released as a result of decomposing fish is going to be minuscule compared to the input from the surrounding countryside. Now, there may be cases when, if for whatever reason you went out and killed 10,000 carp in a one-acre pond, which I'm, highly unlikely, that would present a significant nutrient load and therefore impact water quality. But it's not likely that that kind of situation would occur.
Okay, because that was my concern. This individual, he has not fished more than an area this size, and he is averaging 200 fish a night. The reason why I bring this up is because he was fined and cited prior to this proposal to change to be able to throw them back in the water. He was taking the fish and disposing of them out into the sagebrush. He was basically feeding the coyotes, which may be right or wrong, but he received a very hefty fine. But that person regardless of who you are in here, how many burbot you think you've caught, that guy's probably caught triple that in two nights than everyone in this hole. So that one person has done more good, and then for to punish that individual. That was my concern.
Right. In the old rule, feeding animals with fish was not considered a beneficial use.
Okay. Thank you.
What I under, my name is Roland Rowe. I'm going to have to sit up. My name is Roland Rowe. I'm from Utah, Ogden. What I understand tonight is the only way I will ever receive a survey is if I make an online purchase. Is that correct?
That is not necessarily correct, sir. We do have the online survey that is open to everyone. We have also had surveys on our management waters that are open to everyone. We have done these types of email surveys twice that I'm aware of. We can make accommodations through the regional office that if you're interested in receiving surveys of a particular nature, we'd be happy to provide you with a hard copy.
Where do I get the information to get on your survey list, wherever it is? I have never been surveyed. I lived here 35 years, and I'm very upset with the closure of Inlet. I was never talked about it, never consulted, nothing in the paper that I could recall. But in any event, I would like to be on that list so I can at least have a chance at a survey.
It was a, if you purchase a license in the state of Utah, and part of that license purchase process is to provide an email address. If you do that, automatically you're going to be in the pool that we select from. Now, the 20,000 anglers that we selected from do not represent every angler that had an email address in the database. They were randomly selected from the entire pool. Now, I have also lived here 35 years. I also have never received a survey, but that's, I have also never won the lottery, unfortunately. It's just the nature of a random draw. But if you provide us with your email address, you will at least be in the pool of people that we draw from.
Thank you very much.
Are there any additional questions from the public? Seeing none, we'll go to the council. Questions from the council? Jim.
So what precipitated this new possession rule? Was it something that the RAC or the board brought up, or was it a law enforcement issue, or where did it come from?
It was a presentation at the Wildlife Board last November. The Wildlife Board then directed the aquatic section of the Division of Wildlife Resources to pursue it. So that's
two racks also.
Sorry. So that's where the direction came from.
Do you have any idea what kind of a citation, what number of citations for violation of this previous rule have been?
Under that, it would have been considered an over limit. We have had, you know, numerous over limit violations. I don't have an exact number, but in terms of law enforcement for this, we still have the daily limit, then we have the 2-day possession limit, and there have been concerns that the ability of the law enforcement officers to effectively enforce this 2-day possession. However, we have met with or talked on the phone with the chief of law enforcement, the captains, and each of the regional lieutenants, and they have assured us that it will require no more work to make a case using this 2-day possession limit than it would be to make the standard over limit case that they have right now. So they're willing to take it on.
Okay, so currently, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it not true that under the current regulations, possession was possession in your house, in your boat, in your car. So if you had more than one day's limit of fish in your freezer, you're in violation of the possession rule. Is that correct?
That is absolutely true.
And this does away with that, correct?
No, it does away with you could now technically have 2 days worth of possession in your freezer. One of the discussions that we've had, and I'm sure Ken will be making a presentation here in a bit, is looking at taking that out of those fish that are home in your freezer, on your shelf, and et cetera, moving those from the possession of wildlife type of standard that we have right now to, for lack of a better word, the grocery standard. But that is something that we would like to take out to the public. We also have to have a lot more discussion with our law enforcement people and our aquatics managers before we're willing to move forward with that large of a step at this point in time.
Okay. I ask that question because I didn't think that was clear at all in the wording that you presented, and you specifically said that you're dealing with things not related to residents, and so I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
It's been an extremely difficult rule to enforce over the years. There's only been 3 or 4 real egregious cases that have been made, to my knowledge, in terms of, you know, serious over limits of people, you know, that people had in their freezers or whatever. I'm not sure that we're ready to move away from that, but we're certainly not, you know, we don't have all the information that we need at the moment.
Okay. I got a couple more questions. Should I save them or just move
ask
through
them.
It? I'm interested in this Lost Creek slot limit and wonder why in Lost Creek it applies to all game fish, but in other, almost all the others, it only applies to certain species. And I've never quite understood that.
Maybe Paul could help me out better. Meeting of the minds.
Paul Thompson, Division of Wildlife, Aquatics Manager in Ogden. I think the reason we went with Lost Creek is just all species for simplicity, for law enforcement purposes too, just to keep it simpler. We've been moving between some species there. We tried tiger trout for 3 years. They did not really work out as a predator. We're going to be trying splake, I think, this fall. So we're just trying a bunch of different predators right now to see which ones may control chubs in that water.
My question was, though, that in most places, when you have a slot limit, it will be like strawberry. Okay, you have a slot limit on cutthroats.
Right.
No slot limit on rainbow or kokanee or brook or whatever. Whereas in Lost Creek, where you still got a number of species there, I agree, but why the slot limit for species including all the trout, rather than just one that you might be targeting for a trophy fish?
For example, like rainbow trout is what you're
Yeah, so
you're
rainbow asking. Trout are included in the slot right. limit in Lost Creek and aren't anywhere else that I know of.
Yeah, and rainbow trout aren't a great predator, so it would have probably been for simplicity of having all of the trout species. They're not necessarily a great predator, so...
Yeah, and that was my question, because I've been to Lost Creek and seen guys say, well, I can keep trout at rainbows. They're not in the slot limit. So I think either we need a lot more publicity or we need to look at maybe the slot limit for a specific species in Lost Creek, because most of us are now accustomed to species-specific slot limits.
Yeah, we're stocking Bear Lake cutthroat in there, and that's the predator that we want to protect in order to control chubs. Rainbow trout aren't necessarily, but most of our rainbow trout in Lost Creek don't get up over into the slot limit as well. So,
well, that's another issue.
It hasn't really been an issue of anglers complaining to us that rainbow trout, they're catching rainbow trout that they'd like to keep, but they can't.
They might not tell you about it. Okay, I think I have one more. Can you snag carp?
Technically, no.
Okay. You can shoot them, or no, you can't shoot them.
You can shoot them with a bow.
With a bow, but
you net them.
You can't snag them.
You can spear them. You can do lots of things, but you cannot snag them.
Okay, thanks.
Jeff.
I have a couple questions about the the walleye inlet, mostly about enforcement. If you could help us clarify a little bit about how much enforcement is going on out there, hours, at nighttime, during the daytime. I know you added some citations given, but I was just wondering how often are our COs out there?
Chris may have more information about that. I just had some real basic summary slides here tonight. Chris had some information, I remember, in terms of hours, contacts, et cetera.
My name is Mitch Lane. I'm a sergeant with DWR. I can tell you what we spent this year during the historical close period. We spent 258 hours among 12 different officers, contacted 610 people, checked 480 licenses, detected 15 violations, five of which were snagging violations. The others were license and miscellaneous violations.
Can I continue on? How long is the spawn period go? I don't remember how.
Well, the closure was typically the months of March and April.
April, okay. Nighttime enforcement at all?
Yes.
Okay. It's like that, midnight, yeah. Kind of stuff?
All days of the week, all hours of the day. We tried. I'm sure there were some periods when we weren't there, but we tried to hit the peak times when use was high.
That's why you have a tough job. You should get paid more. Oh, that was a comment. Sorry.
Thanks, Mitch.
I think that's it for enforcement. I just wanted to ask about that, how long the period is. And as far as the biological information that you gave about the limits on walleye, I think there was something about how many walleye you can get, wasn't there? I don't remember. But so, you know what? I'm going to hold off for that and comment. Never mind. I'll wait for a comment.
Okay.
Additional questions from the council? Bryce.
Why couldn't we add an exception of snagging carp? I mean, a simple exception.
I think it just comes down to a question of if there are carp in the water, there's also other species in the water. You could always tell the officer, well, I'm attempting to snag carp. So how is that officer supposed to know that you're not attempting to snag one of those other species that's there? It's just, you know, it becomes difficult. The officers have a difficult job splitting hairs. Tends to make that more difficult for them.
Chris?
Paul, can you tell us what was the specific question that anglers were asked to assess support for opening the Willard Bay Inlet on the survey? I'm wondering if you have that information verbatim so you could just...
The survey, in terms of the survey that was done this year... I do not have the specific wording other than the questions were stepped. First of all was, will you provide us with your license number? And that was used simply to collect, if we did decide to break down the information by some demographic, that would allow us to tie it back in so that we could get their birthday, place of residence, et cetera. Then we went to, did you fish Willard Bay in 2012 or 2013? If they said yes, then they were tiered into a series of questions with regard to the Willard Bay fishery per se. If they said no, they went right to a question, I believe, said, were you aware of the Willard Bay Inlet closure? Do you support the closure? And then finally, there was a free-form question that said, please provide us, you know, any comments that you might have on Willard Bay. And so everybody had the chance of answering the question, were you aware of the closure and did you support the closure? However, when we summarized the information, we did split it out as to those people that did fish Willard Bay versus those people that didn't. I don't have all that information here with me tonight, but I do believe when we've looked at the information that we had very strong support from the people that did fish Willard Bay to leave the Willard Bay Inlet open. And I think I have that answer or that summary here. But we also, there was even more support for from the people that didn't fish Willard Bay, but we pretty much discounted their opinion because they weren't part of the population that uses the reservoir.
So a follow-up question, and I'm looking for you to educate me about this. What is so compelling about being able to fish that inlet that we think it needs to be opened?
The biggest thing there is that part of our job as fisheries biologists, as wildlife managers in the state of Utah, is to provide opportunity. And to do so in such a way that it doesn't damage the resource. The resource, the walleye that use Willard Bay, are a relatively small fraction of the total population. The eggs that they produce, based on previous studies, by and large don't hatch or recruit to the fishery because of sedimentation. Now we have the opportunity where it's not going to be a biological impact if we allow fishing during this period of time. So the question is, can socially we allow additional opportunity? Law enforcement said that they could deal with what had been a previous issue of snagging during that period of time. They said that they were willing to take that on, and I think they did a pretty good job at that. So now you have the opportunity for people that may never have the opportunity to catch a walleye again because they're not necessarily accessible to most shore fishermen during most times of the year, to go out there and experience the opportunity to catch this very desirable sport fish. So that's the basic philosophy on how we pretty much manage all of our fisheries, and in this case, why it was desirable to open up that inlet.
Thank you.
Paul, and you said Willard Bay, but you specifically meant the inlet, the fish that spawn in the inlet.
That's correct. I'm sorry, the fish that spawn in the inlet, that's what I meant. They're the ones that don't successfully recruit to the fishery.
Jeffrey.
Just one. This is just to educate me a little bit on how walleye spawn. And so when they're in that inlet or anywhere else, they would be concentrated in there. And it gives people an opportunity, as you said, to maybe catch a walleye that they wouldn't by fishing out there. Are they eating in there? I mean, are they casting baits that they're trying to get these walleye to eat their bait,
primarily,
or are they trying to snag them with a hook? I'm trying to get the feel for this. In that inlet, are they actively feeding? How do you fish for a fish?
Primarily what they're going to catch during that type of activity are going to be the males. The females, when they move into the channel, they are not interested in feeding. The males, however, are pretty aggressive. I don't know that they're necessarily eating as much as they are just very aggressive. Walleye are broadcast spawners. They don't build a nest or anything like that. But the way that you get to pass along your genetic material is that you're more aggressive than that other guy. So that's part of it. It's just an aggression type of response more than just a feeding response.
Jim?
So in the Provo River, as it goes into Utah Lake, they have a closure. Does that mean that they're just more successful in their spawning in the Provo than they are in the Willard Bay Inlet? Or
That closure is a social closure. It's not a biological closure for there. There, the snagging got to be such that the law enforcement officers at that time felt like that they could not deal with this in any way except for snagging. And you have to remember that there are the threatened June sucker that are attempting to use that river in a similar time frame also. So you have the possibility of people snagging June sucker during that period of time. We have, in fact, discussed with the region last year and with the June sucker recovery program to reopen those tributaries for walleye fishing during those time periods. The recovery program is very much in favor of it because walleye love to eat little June sucker. But we still have to overcome this social thing of snagging. How do we enforce that, and how do we also prevent any inadvertent take of the threatened June sucker?
Yeah, good. Thank you. It just occurred to me that we've got one open and one not open, and so I appreciate that answer.
Paul, on the recommended methods of disposal, that's not going to be part of the rule, but it's just going to be a recommendation that goes along and maybe in the proclamation.
It will be in the proclamation in one of those boxes, information boxes in there. Putting it into rule under the advice of our attorney got to be a little bit messy, I guess.
Okay.
So it was just simply stated that we probably needed to just go down the recommendation road rather than saying these are the only ways that you can dispose of them.
So a question on that is the second one, buried on the shoreline of the water where the fish was caught. That would be subject to the regulations of the pertinent land management agency. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. In fact, Paul Kelly last night at the Central Region RAC suggested that we remove that from the list of recommendations for that reason, and just in some of their high use waters are concerned about, you know, potential problems with fluctuating water levels, et cetera. It's been our policy to try and present the same information to every RAC so that everybody gets to see the same thing. So we did not make that change between last night and tonight. However, it seems to be a reasonable thing that we would want to take into consideration to just take that off the list of recommendations.
I could see where it, and I'll wait until the comments, but I will comment on that specifically, okay?
Okay.
So, yeah. I'll be
I can
good.
Hardly wait.
Yeah, okay. So we're done with our, any additional questions from the council? John Blazard.
I just had a question about the spear fishing.
Okay.
And I'm not a boater, scuba diver. I don't even feel my bathtub there full. But I do hear oft times that swimmers are hit by boats. What kind of... Is there a safety issue or a concern there with guys boating and fishing? And
first of all, I think it's important for us to know that according to the spear fishermen and their organization, there's between 1 and 200 spear fishermen statewide. Now, even if that estimate's off by a factor of 10, we're talking about 1,000 to 2,000 spear fishermen statewide. So, in fact, in 35 years of doing this, I have encountered exactly one spear fisherman in the field, and that happened to be while I was recreational fishing this past year. I've never actually interviewed one on a creel survey. No one has statewide. Have we actually talked to a spear fisherman during a creel survey? So the probability that you're going to encounter one is relatively low. So that's that. Secondly, our rule requires that it has to be, that spear has to be tethered to the spear fisherman. We do not allow what's called free shafting, like you probably remember the old Sea Hunt show that was on television in the 60s, or the old James Bond movies where they shot spears, you know, and they went way out there. That's not allowed in this state. I believe it's a 10-foot tether has to be on that spear. So, again, I don't know of anyone who's ever been injured by a spear fisherman.
I was worried about them being injured by a boat
that's probably a more realistic worry than any danger that they present, because not all boaters are considerate of that dive flag. Right.
Thank you.
Drew Cushing, it's a legal requirement for anybody that dives out of a boat to have a diver down buoy. So wherever that diver is, theoretically up above them, is a flag that identifies a diver as being down in the water.
That shows you how much I know about boating. Thank you.
Jeffrey.
One more follow-up on Robert's can of worms he tried to open up. On disposal of fish on the shoreline or by burying them, I'm just thinking, is it possible that, it's just a recommendation, you're going to tweak this, as I assume, but maybe say they have to bury it a certain depth or something like that. Just that way it wouldn't be like somebody burying it under 6 inches of dirt and then the first wave exposes it. I just wonder if that's an option.
I don't know. It is just a recommendation. I think that we have to listen very carefully to what the RACs recommend and what our land management partners recommend on this, and go with whatever avenue is suggested there.
Any additional questions from the council? Seeing none, we're going to go to the comment cards. Jim Morgan.
I'm Jim Morgan. I'm part of the Friends of Willard Bay group. I spent two terms on RAC and two terms on the Habitat Council, so I know what you guys are thinking about. In this particular instance, our man that was up there from DWR just said a minute ago that those fish don't bite. They don't eat. They fight once in a while, but they do not eat. And that inlet 34, 35, 36 years ago was an absolute killing field. Trawl nets were thrown out and pulled in. Garbage cans were filled up. The people that did it, I can't talk about because they kept saying, State Department, State Department. So I'll let you figure that out. The one good thing that's come, number one, I wouldn't fish the inlet simply because it's an area approximately this size, and we don't know, we're not talking about just walleye. Almost any fish, or a majority or a portion of any fish will go upstream to spawn if they have the opportunity. They're sex-crazed maniacs. They don't care about eating anything. You don't ever, the only way you're going to hook one is to snag it somehow. Unless you get some little bitty booger that just takes a nip at something because he's bigger. But those fish are not going to feed. It's not a good place to introduce our kids to fishing during the spawn. The good part of all this is that it's created an organization that I think all of you know about. And it's predominantly right now a Box Elder County organization. It's going to grow and grow and grow and make Willard Bay far more accessible to many more people. And for that reason, in addition to the fact that it's a killing field, I ask that your recommendation to the Wildlife Board to not reopen that inlet during the spawn. One other thing, I spoke today with a vice president of Weber Basin Water. Now, that canal that delivers the water is closed to fishing
from the Weaver River all the way out to where it drops into that killing field. They are completely disturbed and upset because it takes a lot of work for them to go out and repair fences and replace gates, pick up garbage and so on, that people just leave there indiscriminately. So you may be hearing from them. And I if you have any questions, I'm glad to answer.
We're good. Can you hand the mic to Ronald?
I didn't hear you.
Could you hand him the mic when you step away?
Pardon?
If you'd hand him the mic, he won't have to stand.
Thank you. Again, I'm Roland Rowe, Ogden, Utah. I'm going to read this. Excuse me. I only have to do that. I get my eyes right. The reopening of Willard Bay Inlet Channel. Oh, thank you. The reopening of Willard Bay Inlet Channel to fishermen during the walleye spawn, while not biologically damaging to the overall walleye population of Willard Bay, carries some ethical problems that were either overlooked or not fully considered. The reopening carries with it the potential for illegal, unsportsmanlike practice of snagging walleyes that had bunched up at the baffles at the east end of the inlet. It was the very reason that the inlet was closed some 34 years ago. It was reopened to provide an opportunity for shore fishermen to catch walleye on the premise that DWR law enforcement personnel could prevent the illegal and unscrupulous taking of walleyes through snagging. However, the only way to prevent illegal snagging is for DWR law enforcement personnel to be present 24/7 during the entire 41-day spawn. The DWR briefer, Chris Penny, during his presentation before the informational rack on 7 August 13, presented data showing that 248 man-hours were expended by some 20 law enforcement, DWR law enforcement personnel, both in uniform and undercover, in policing the inlet for snaggers using a 24/7 policing requirement to compute inlet policing coverage results in 10.33 days of coverage. That's 348 divided by 24. Out of the 41-day spawn, data from the same briefing showed that two citations, today it was listed as five, were issued for willful snagging and 10 were issued by parks personnel for trespass. I'm not arguing the figures. They may change, as they may have today. Excuse me. Does anyone really here believe that you're going to trespass, that you are not going to try to snag walleye? The fact that snagging occurred should not, and I repeat not, have been a surprise to anybody. How many more walleyes were taken during 31 uncovered days? The answer to that question is moot. Well, unknown, because the DWR briefer made the point that repeatedly that the overall biological impact inconsequential.
Roll. We can't get that on the tape.
The DWR briefer made the point repeatedly that the overall biological effect is inconsequential. Thank you. What is not inconsequential is the ethical aspects of the reopening. The DWR, in proposing the reopening of the inlet and the RAC in supporting that reopening of the inlet, in a de facto manner has accepted the fact that walleyes were going to be taken illegally because of DWR's lack of sufficient law enforcement personnel to police the inlet 24/7 during the entire walleye spawn. In summary, the RAC, in supporting the original inlet reopening of the inlet channel, has placed itself in an untenable ethical position of supporting an action which they should have known and which they did indeed lead to illegal taking of walleyes by snagging. To argue that the illegal taking is just inconsequential is it's morally absurd as being a little bit pregnant. I leave it at that. Thank you for your time.
Ken Strong.
Ken Strong, representing Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife. And I'd like to thank the RAC for allowing me to attend the meeting and state some of our proposals on these new fishing regulations. To start with, back in 2002, they lowered the limit on fish, on trout, at which time the sales of licenses took a drastic drop. And it's been working its way back up. When they proposed the two-pole limit, or two-pole license, it took a rise up in people to buy more permits. But we're still way down on the license sales. And the reason for that, any way you want to look at it, is because people aren't buying the licenses because they don't feel like they're getting their money's worth out of the fishing. So what Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife would like to do is on the possession limit in Idaho, you have 2-day possession limit in the field. You get home, you can have your freezer full of fish. It doesn't matter because they don't count on your limit. So we would like to propose the 2-day in the field, such as the DWR has, but we'd like to propose at least a 3-day in your fridge or freezer or anywhere else. We'd also like to propose that cooked fish no longer be considered part of your limit. So if you cook fish, go home, cook fish, and you don't eat them all and you stick them in your fridge, they're still part of your limit. And if people want to bottle fish, they still count as part of their limit. It's almost like we're penalizing people for going fishing. And so we'd like to make it that any cooked fish no longer counts on your limit. And for strawberry, we understand that Flaming Gorge is with Wyoming, and so there has to be an agreement between those two states. But for, as far as strawberry goes, it would be the only reservoir in the state of Utah that does not have the 2-day possession limit. And we would propose that strawberry be included in the possession limit of 2 days so that it is straight across the board. There's no questions about it. It's just statewide. And I thank you.
Thank you. Paul Roberts.
Perhaps my proposal here is for the language: fish that are reduced for later consumption by cleaning and gutting or filleting, then freezing, canning, smoking, or drying, may be in possession up to 5 or whatever the board might consider wise days limit from the waters which are caught, if they're labeled for such. If you got 2 fish from a community one and 10 from another water where that's the limit, you have to put the label on to say where they're from. Now, fish on ice in the round or clean may be possessed up to a 2-day limit from the waters where they are caught. Now, this explanation. This will reflect more on how fishermen actually use their catch. Trout on ice is really what possession is, our limits are about. If you go fishing for a couple days and you've got 2 days fish, half in the ice and half on a stringer or your creel, then that would be legal the way this proposal is written. And then, so if you're on a trip, beyond 2 days would be considered wastage. That's about what trout on ice is really good for. And only your last 2 days could then be taken home. Everything else has to be eaten. Now, the rest have to be returned unharmed or eaten. Trout or other fish in the creel should be restricted to 1 day's possession to prevent spoilage. If they're in the air or on a stringer in particularly warmer waters, 1 day is, or till you go home to your campfire, is all your thing. And then changing the subject, thoughts for the fishing guidebook. It needs a strong directive not to leave fish line or discarded fishing equipment on the pond or stream bank. I pick up a lot of this walking around Pioneer Pond in Brigham City, and mention that litter laws do apply to fishermen. And for the book itself, sell more advertising so the book can be made waterproof. You take that book out in the field and one drop of rain and it's gone. And on the website under Rules for Pacific Waters, it reads about like the fishing guide. If they were put into HTML blocks where you could click and just print that one for the waters you're actually going to fish, and then you could enhance it with water descriptions, what fish are there, road access, how to get there, and handicap or mobile but walking seniors like the front row here, they might not be able to climb up and down steep cliffs. That kind of information would be find most useful and help in planning trips. It's no fun to get to the parking lot and discover it's a rock climb down to the water. Thank you.
Thank you. Terry Reist.
Terry Reist, representing the Utah Spearfishing Association. Couple of comments initially, and I have a proposal. I'd just like to publicly thank Paul Burgey and Drew Cushing for all the effort that they put into facilitating the meetings between the spearfishermen and all the other angler groups, as well as the angler groups who spent their time and efforts helping us put these proposals together. At times, I kind of felt a little bit bad for Paul and Drew. It was a little bit like cat herding in some of the meetings, but they did a great job. As well as Paul Drummond from the UAC. As a matter of just information for consideration, currently there for spear fishermen there is a no take on large and smallmouth bass in the state from the months of April, May, and June, presumably to protect the spawn. And conversely, the other 433,000 approximate line fishermen can catch as many limits, can catch their limit on a daily basis if they want to for the same species. Just an FYI. As spear fishermen, we do shoot a lot of carp, mostly because up until now, that's all you could shoot. And, you know, when the water started getting warm enough to get into, March and April, May, carp was the only thing we could shoot. But we still do shoot a lot of carp, and being able to dispose of those carp in the waters where we shoot them is a great benefit, and we strongly support that amendment or that proposal. And let's see. Sorry, I'm taking a little bit of time here. We'd like to propose that for the next 2014 survey for fishing, that the public have the opportunity to comment on whether or not spear fishing should be allowed in the catch and kill waters, so that on waters that currently aren't open to us, and there aren't that many now, that have catch and kill or no limits, that they be pulled, and that hopefully in 2015 spearfishing would be allowed for catch and kill species in those specific waters. Thank you.
Thank you. John Overdeek.
My name is John Overdeek from Riverdale. Before I make a presentation to the RAC board, I would like to have Drew Cushing, answer me this question, please. At one time, five of us went to Lake Powell in the 80s. There were five boats, three in each boat. The tally for those four wonderful days was 1,780 stripers.
the largest of which was in excess of 12 pounds. The question I have for Drew is this. Drew, how can I distinguish in any way, shape, or form in relationship to my freezer between a wiper and a striper?
Drew,
I can't confused.
Answer that. I'm confused.
If you're down at Lake Powell and you have some fish, you have to presume they're striped bass. If you're fishing up north anywhere but Lake Powell, you have to presume they're wipers.
Yeah. Jim, come up to the microphone. We need to have you make your comments.
In a court of law, that's a bugger, huh? My presentation to the rack board is this. Excuse me, I got to get my picture. I'll be brief, I promise. Gentlemen, in front of me, I hope you can all see it. The date was March 20th, 2013. That's the inlet channel. There it is. Drew Cushing and all the wonderful people that represent us have no control over the water. They don't. This is what I got from five people, from a wonderful marine manager at the North Marina 5 years ago. Five consecutive years of the state legislature reducing money. When you don't have any money, you don't have any water, you cannot expand fishing. You cannot expand growth. I would like to recommend to the RAC board members, the pictures. In the spring of next year, I'm here to tell you I know spawning. For 50 years, I've fished Willard Bay. I am the expert. Believe me, I know it. I was the contributor when I was a teenager. I was 18, 19 years old. The fish trap at Bear Lake, the top said, we will milk cutthroat. Two people were there to milk. This guy right here, this guy you're looking at, I was on my hands and feet saying, hey, I got a net. Get that big one over there. I was a contributor. Okay, Paul, I'll hurry. Anyway, my input with infrastructure, my input with the hundreds of hours I have to help all of you folks. Okay, now this is my recommendation. Please, RAC board members, please make a motion to this effect. I suggest that next spring, because the Bureau of Reclamation sign, when you approach Willard Bay, says it's a Bureau of Reclamation. So the federal government has ownership. What does this say? What does my hat say? Guess what? I've been part of that organization. They're federal folks. They help. Now, next spring, guess what happens? You're not going to get any water. If you have a multitude of snow on top of that mountain, not a drop will be put in Willard Bay during the spawn. Historically, they spawn within the rocks. Don't they, Jim? And guess what? You will lose, in all probabilities. Did we have a successful spawn last year, Mr. Penny? Have you got data there, too? If you don't, guess what? We need it for a decision for the future. And the future is what? I stand here before you for your grandchildren, not for my own purpose. I have monetary gains. I can fish anywhere. I don't want I want your grandchildren to have the same opportunity I've had.
Your recommendation, John.
Yes, my recommendation is this. 3 wipers, 3 walleye, close the inlet for until we have an approximation of full pool. And Drew Cushing, last time he ended the meeting here, he says, we will negotiate. I'm willing, Drew. I'm willing. And guess what? My recommendation is absolutely close it next year because lack of water, lack of reproduction. The eggs are laid in the silt. You all know about silt. There's no reproduction rate within the channel itself. Now, guess what? Please close the channel. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Jerry Hoyt.
Jerry Hoyt, Ogden, Utah. Let me get my glasses on here. Let me start by making my position clear. I strongly oppose the opening of the Willard Bay Channel during the walleye spawn. Until this year, the inlet channel had been closed for 34 years due to excessive snagging and over-harvesting of spawning walleye. This closure has worked. The proof is in the walleye population currently in Willard Bay. I expressed my concerns in 2 lengthy emails sent to each of you. I hope you have read and considered the issues presented. I want to add one important point that wasn't mentioned in the emails or when I spoke at the last meeting. I believe that opening the channel sets a precedent that could lead to other streams and inlets being opened during the spawn to add more fishing opportunities and sell more fishing licenses at the expense of the fish. I also think it sets a bad example for our young and upcoming new fishermen. They need to be taught to protect our spawning fish in all waters in Utah. In closing, I would like to ask the council to consider a motion to close the Willard Bay Channel. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Melvin Nelson.
Hi, I'm from Brigham. I've got this 8-foot pontoon with a 30-pound thrust motor on it, but to license it, it's $37. Now, you buy an electric car and you get $5,000 back. I would think that that maybe the government would want to promote the use of electric motors for fishing. And maybe I'm cheap, but I just think it's ridiculous, that much money. And also, I'm wondering what happened to fishing at Hiram. My friend and I, 3 years ago, he caught a 6-pound brown, I caught a 5-pound rainbow. The last half dozen times we've went, we've caught 8 10-inchers. And I heard a rumor or a speculation that when we had that high water, they let the water out of the spillway so fast that a lot of the big fish went down the spillway. So I'm just curious as to what happened and if something could be done to maybe get some bigger fish going in there. Thank
okay.
you.
Chris, will you talk to him after we're done with this topic? And obviously on taxes, please talk to your legislator because they're the ones who handle those things. Harold Anderson.
I'm just going to follow up on Hiram again. In the early spring, there's a big runoff that goes down into the spillway. And we used to go down there, I know, with my dad, and we used to really have fun, either lose our pole, slide down, because we'd go to sleep, and then there was big enough fish to take it in. So you had to be awake and had a lot of fun one way or another. Now, you can't even get down there. Now, is Hiram Spillway still open for fishing? And it's just not a private for the private landowners. That's what I'm asking, because there's just no way in there. I don't know how much room you can have by a walk down there, but we used to have real good paths down there, and people used to have a lot of fun. They had to watch their poles because it would get taken in. And a lot of fish go down there in the spring on the runoff. And now it's hard to even get into the stream because it's so much private land. I'd like to have an answer to that if it's possible. Thanks.
And you could speak with them, Chris. Thank you. Trevor Earle.
Hi, my name's Trevor Earle. Live in Ogden, Utah. First of all, thank you all. I handed out a piece of paper. At the top it has a big fish tackle. All of you should have that. This is just kind of to but the survey that was put out by the DWR. I personally had never received an email asking what my opinion was. None of my friends do, and none of the people that I associate and hang out with and fish with on these fishing forums do. On that paper, it shows the exact opposite of what the DWR was showing. It's saying 74% of what I'm going to call the hardcore fishermen, the people that actually go out and are the true fishermen, if you can say that, the true walleye fishermen, they want it closed. We understand it is not a biological issue, it's a social issue. James, you had mentioned the Utah Lake Inlet. If it's a social issue in Utah Lake, by damn it, it's a social issue at Willard Bay, I would think. Hours spent by DWR, that was more just kind of a question. In the first meeting we had up here a month or so ago.
Informational,
thank you. It was stated that there was 20 officers. This one said there was 12. Of those officers, my question, how many of those officers were actually stationed and supposed to be working Willard Bay?
We'd have to have law enforcement answer that specifically, but I'm sure.
Okay, I can answer it for you. There's two officers for Willard Bay. So if there was a total of 12 or a total of 20, just depending on the numbers that you want to go off of, either this meeting or last meeting, that means that surrounding waters had to give up their officers to come down and babysit and watch for snaggers at the inlet. So that's another issue. Another question that I had or comment was the percentage of the people that was in the survey that was put out by the DWR. It was 12%, I believe, was actual walleye fishermen. 18? Okay, thank you. That kind of correlates, if you would, and marries up to the amount of people that opposed it. So a true walleye fisherman, people that actually care about the species, probably voted and wanted it closed. It is a social issue. Another thing that I wanted to mention is in all waters, for the most part, that you have like salmon spawning, those waters are closed. If it's a spawning fish, it needs to be protected. Flaming Gorge, you can't go into Linwood Bay during the Laker spawn because they're there doing their thing. They need to be protected. Okay, these fish are the same. They need to be protected. Regardless of the biological outcome for a social issue. And oh, one last, this is just a comment. I went down and picked up treble hooks that were about that long and about that wide. They were about twice the width of my thumb. Spooled on them was 50-pound braid. That's what your typical walleye fisherman is using at the inlet.
Thank you. I have one last comment card. Did not wish to speak to the RAC. Mark Featherington His comments were closing the inlet along with protecting all spawning grounds is only common sense. Biology aside, it is just wrong. I would assume he means to have it open and allow snagging and fishing there. Are there any additional comments from the public on the agenda item? Seeing none, we're going to... It has to be a comment. Okay. And I hope it's something that you haven't already covered. And quick. John Overdeek.
Okay. John Overdeek, 896 West, 4350 South, Riverdale, 3947017. Please call me for future information in relationship to my objections. The last comment I can make is there are 11 species in Willard Bay. They all eat. My comment is this. I'm a professional bass fisherman, state champion. I know what I'm talking about. I fished a 4-inch Kalen curly tail and an 8-inch bluegill ate it. Guess what? When there is not enough bait fish, hunger prevails. I have put a knife into 6 wipers. There's no bait fish. I've seen 6 bait fish in the full pool. They were gutted and cleaned. I lost the wager. There were 250 gizzard shad within these 6 fish. 3 weeks ago, I gutted 6 fish. Not one vertebrae in it. Only crayfish, period. That's my comment.
Thank you, John. Any additional comments? Seeing none, we're going to close it off to the public. No comments from the council. I'll just go real quick first on the catch and kill provisions, recommendations for disposal. Burying fish on the shoreline, I think, could incur a risk to the people fishing there, especially where we have bears. And so I would definitely encourage the division not to to recommend that as a disposal method. Jeffrey.
Can I do 2 comments on 2 different topics, or should
I
wait?
We're just going to comment on the agenda item, so
okay.
How about it?
First of all, I just want to talk about the possession limit. I'm inclined to go along this. I might pass it on to somebody else that might be interested in doing a motion. But when you'd ask for an extra limit during the day, was Mike? I think he said that they were working on making do some changes on that or working on that already. So is it not necessary to make a motion if it's already being considered for further work, you know, further discussion? Did I miss that from you guys? I thought you said it was that's something that you're going to be discussing real soon, and if not, then there's no sense doing a motion.
The proposal is to have a 2-day possession limit on almost all waters. It's in the proposal.
Okay, I'm
sorry if I confused the issue. Paul Birdsey, I'm sorry if I confused the issue. Based on the information that we've received through Ken, our discussions with him, et cetera, and some other people, we are considering the idea that possession limits are only good until that fish reaches your home and is, you know, reduced to groceries at that point in time. But I also tried to make it clear that this is just an idea at this point in time, that we have a long way to go with working with our regional aquatics managers, law enforcement, and members of the general public before we could move forward with that kind of recommendation. We We try really hard to listen to the public. That's difficult when you have 500,000 bosses to listen to all of them. But we do make that effort, and we at the very least, I guess what I would ask for, if it's up to me to ask, is that you make a recommendation that we look into this further, rather than making a recommendation to move forward with it.
That answered my question. But I have a comment, though.
Let me just add on that. We have had in the past several people that were prosecuted for taking lots of fish. They would take them home, and they would have a freezer full of fish. So if you change it, if it was changed in the future, or if you made a recommendation to change it now so that once it got to the home, it was out of that, potentially you could fish. You could take a limit home every day, and you could have a freezer full of fish. If they're not used, then you're still really wasting those fish. But in the past, those people were prosecuted for taking too many fish, I believe. We're a little past public comment. So I think we all understand what we're talking about, though. But you proposed cooking them. We understand that. Well, you want to ask a question of Ken to clarify his proposal?
I do. And then I'd like to make a comment on the walleye, but I do want to see, if you want a motion made, I'd like to have a clear idea of exactly what you'd like to hear, so that we can't make a motion if we don't understand exactly what you'd like.
So, Ken, you could respond to his question, since he's specifically asking you something.
On November 1st of last year, I made the recommendation to the RAC that we have a 3-day possession limit at that time. At that time, it was directed to go before, at the Wildlife Board I made it. At that time, the Wildlife Board made the recommendation to go through the RACs. I had proposed a 3-day possession limit.
Okay, that cleared up. Now, can I make a comment?
Go ahead.
All right. I want to make a comment on the Willard Bay. As I mentioned at the last one, I'm old enough to remember that, although most people think I'm only 29 years old, in reality, in the 70s, I was in high school. So, and we got to see that carnage. It was heinous. It was a circus. It was unethical behavior to the nth degree. Want to make sure that I comment on the point that I really don't want to see that happen again. I've talked to some people. It's happening again now. The enforcement issue, Mitch had mentioned they did 258 hours, but if it's March and April, that's 60 days. That's 4.5 hours a day. Even if it's 30 days, that's still 60% of the time it's not being enforced. And most of the time, those things are just getting snagged. Biological data is great, it's important, getting opportunity for people to catch fish is important, but sometimes ethics has to trump that. And when you consider going out there and doing unethical things, and what the vast majority of things are doing this in a known snagging area that's not being, can't be enforced all the time, I just really feel like it's something that we really need to consider closing it up. It just doesn't make sense to have a spawning area that's open to people to do what naturally happens out there, and that is cast out with a treble hook and see what comes in. I also agree with the idea that it might create a precedent for opening other spawning areas just because you want to increase opportunity. Ethics has to count for something.
Paul.
I'd also like to comment on recommend disposal. Here again, I agree with our chairman that disposing of those fish by burying them along the lake shore is probably not the proper place, especially if you think about a grandfather and a granddaughter, and having a granddaughter step in a hole where a dead fish has been buried for 2 or 3 days, and just not a real pleasant thought. So we'd really recommend that not be listed as a potential disposal.
Additional comments? John Leonard.
I'd second that. I had my black lab roll in one that had been disposed of, and that's not fun to deal with. I'd rather deal with a skunk than a dog rolling in a dead fish.
No additional comments from the council. I'd like to go over the... I have five items that people have raised in their comments. The closure of Willard Bay Inlet during the walleye spawn. Changing the possession limit to potentially a two-day possession limit in the field and a three-day in the fridge with no limit on cooked fish. Allowing a two-day possession limit at Strawberry. Reviewing in 2015 that all catch and kill waters would be open to spearfishing. And a proposed limit of three wiper and three walleye at Willard Bay. So if there are any of those specific items you'd like to cover before we cover the balance of it, or if you want to include those in a motion and the balance, it's up to the council.
Question.
Jeffrey.
I didn't understand. You're talking about breaking them out individually?
Well, if someone wants to, we just want to make sure, if somebody wants to make a motion to cover any of those that it's in the motion or it's covered separately. So before we do the balance, if someone wants to do the closure of Willard Bay in the balance but not touch the other ones, and no one else wants to hit them, then one motion would be fine, I think. But if somebody makes a motion and it isn't covering what you want, make a motion to amend to include that, and we'll do the amendment first. Okay. John Leonard.
I'd like to make a motion then that we accept the proposal of DWR as presented with the addition of the five items that you just mentioned.
Do you want to do all of those?
Yes.
I'll second it.
Second by Craig Van Tassel. Or no, it was Jim Gaskell. Okay. I heard it, but I didn't see who it was. Okay.
So would you clarify, will we include those in, does that mean that the three wiper, three walleye is a motion to recommend that, or we separate that out?
That okay. That is part of Jim or John Leonard's motion. So I'll read it to make sure the maker's in agreement. So let me just write down real quick. Okay, so the motion would be to recommend the Wildlife Board approve the Fishing Guidebook and Rule R657-13 as presented with the following additions. One, the closure of Willard Bay Inlet during the walleye spawn. Two, a two-day limit possession in the field and a three-day limit in the refrigerator or freezer, let's say, and there would be no limit on cooked fish. The third point would Strawberry would have a two-day possession limit. Number four, in 2015, all catch and kill waters would be open to spearfishing. And number five, Willard Bay would have a three wiper and three walleye limit. So I should probably say it would be a three walleye, three wiper daily possession limit. Is that okay for your motion, John?
Yes.
And Jim? Okay. So we have a motion on the table. Discussion on the motion?
Got a question. What is the current limit right now at Willard?
Paul Thompson, Clocks Manager in Ogden. Wipers are at 3 right now. We had them at 6, but we haven't had the fish to stock out, so we don't have the numbers in the reservoir that we want. But if we do get the source again to stock wipers, we would like to raise that back up to 6. And walleyes are at 6.
So walleyes are at 6 presently. They would be reduced to 3. And then wipers could only be 3. They couldn't be increased based upon stocking ability by the division. Jeffrey?
We still doing discussion?
We're discussing,
on this?
Yeah.
Can I ask another question of the biologist about that? I mean, on the walleye, from what I understand, they said they were doing fine on walleye, the good reproduction, everything's fine. Would there be any valid reason to lower it to 3? That you know of? On walleye, I'm talking about.
Chris Penny, I'm the regional aquatic biologist in Ogden, and I cover standing waters, including Willard Bay Reservoir. Mr. Hicks, no, not at this time. Right now, the walleye population is doing quite well. It does go through cycles. We're in a pretty good upswing, but the current limit has served the reservoir well in the past.
Okay. Thanks.
Bryce, do you have additional comments or discussion on the motion?
I'd kind of like to either strike that or, you know, break this down into pieces because I don't think, you know, that as a whole.
I think we'll have to vote on the motion, but you can certainly.
Well, just for discussion you could certainly, before we vote.
For so. Your discussion, you could state what, you know, you're going to vote against the current motion because of that part of the motion.
A substitute motion.
Couldn't you amend it?
Point of order?
Yes, sir.
He could amend the motion.
Do you want to amend the motion?
Strike yeah, part I'd of like it? To, I'd like to amend the motion that we strike the 3 wiper walleye proposal from it. And I'm a little bit torn on the 2-day limit at Strawberry. Kind of like to see it maybe a test result from a couple of the waters. Okay. So strike those 2 from the proposal.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Oh, okay. So we have a motion to amend from Bryce and seconded by Paul to remove from the original motion the 2-day possession limit at Strawberry and the 3 wiper, 3 walleye limit on Willard Bay. Discussion on the motion? Bruce?
I think I'm having a discussion on this motion and not the amended motion.
Let's
which one are we having a discussion?
The amendment to the original motion.
I would like to have a discussion on the original.
Okay. So discussion on the amendment.
I wish you had separated those and made them 2 amendments because I'm a little bit one I like, one I don't like so much. I think I'll still vote for it, though.
John Blazer.
I would support especially the discussion about extending the limits on Strawberry. I know the DWR has spent a lot of time and money there, and to go from their recommendation of 1 daily limit to 3 or 4 kind of concerns me. To 2 total.
2-day possession limit.
Two days possession, was 1 in the freezer or not, or no?
I think the 2-day, as the original motion was made, the 2-day Strawberry possession limit would probably
would be total.
would restrict even with the
okay,
the 2-day limit in the field, 3-day in the.
The other question, I don't know whether it pertains to the first motion or the second motion. We didn't mention anything about burying dead fish to dispose of them.
It's not actually in the rule. It was something they were just going to put in there as an advisory.
Okay.
I think the division will remove that based upon our comments.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Discussion on the amendment? Jeffrey?
I think I'm going to go along and support that, the removal of the strawberry portion and the removal of the 6 walleye portion.
2 wiper, 2 walleye.
And 2, yeah, 3 and 3.
Oh, 3
I'm
and 3, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll get it straight. Yeah, I think so. And then can we discuss the overall thing again after this?
Yeah, after okay. We finish the amendment, we'll go back to the original motion. So any additional discussion on the amendment?
Could you please read it to us again?
So the amendment would remove the increase in possession limit at Strawberry to 2-day, and it would remove the 3 wiper, 3 walleye limit on Willard Bay.
So that would revert then
to
back
what
to
was
to the recommendation?
Yes.
Of the division. Okay.
Read the original amendment again.
Just a three.
Okay. The original motion?
Original motion with the 3 amendments now with the
okay.
2 gone.
Well, if the amendment passes, the original, the motion under consideration after the amendment passes would be that we would recommend the Wildlife Board adopt the fishing guidebook and rule R657-13 as presented with the following, and I can't remember what term I used, but the following changes.
Exceptions.
Yeah. Close the Willard Bay Inlet during the walleye spawn. Have a 2-day possession limit in the field and a 3-day in the fridge with no limit on cooked fish. And then in 2015, all catch and kill waters would be open to spearfishing. That's what the original motion would end up being if the amendment passes. So it kind of conflicts with the strawberry thing.
Right.
Because you're saying that strawberry would still have a 2-day.
Would have a 1-day.
Would have a 1-day.
Yeah, strawberry would have a 1-day under the proposal, under the division's proposal.
But under number 2, as I read it, a 2-day possession limit in the field could be confused as applying to strawberry also.
Doesn't the amendment pull that back to 1-day, though, second amendment?
The amendment had a specific item number 3 was that strawberry would have a 2-day possession limit separately.
You're right, but we could subsequently amend that after we take care of this amendment.
Yes. Perhaps we should ask the maker of the amendment to
I would clarify that we would not allow the 2-day at strawberry and go with what the division recommends, which is 1-day possession limit at strawberry.
I second that.
Yeah, I think...
Is that clear?
I think we should just clarify that item number 2, a 2-day possession limit in the field, 3-day in the fridge, and cooked fish would have no limit, would apply to the waters except Flaming Gorge
and
strawberry.
Okay. Well, thank you.
So the maker of the motion is agreeable and is the second. Okay. Okay. So I'll just go over it one more time. The original motion, if this amendment passes, would be to accept the division's presentation with the following exceptions. Number 1, close Willard Bay Inlet during the walleye spawn. Number 2, you'd have a 2-day possession limit in the field, 3-day in the fridge, no limit on cooked fish, excluding strawberry and Flaming Gorge. and in 2015, all catch and kill waters would be open to spearfishing if this amendment passes. Everybody clear? Okay. Any additional discussion?
Yes.
Bruce.
So I'm assuming the reason you limit the amount of fish in the freezer is because you don't want to have a huge amount of fish taken from the field. So if that's the case, it makes no sense to me why you would allow unlimited processing other ways, i.e. bottling, canning, yes, so forth and so on, which would fall under cooking.
Yeah. If you legally harvest just one limit per day, you're not actually breaking any rules if you just keep those in the fridge, eventually you might waste them, but they're not wasted yet, I would guess. So.
Well, I understand the motion. Yeah. You said fridge, but I think we all interpreted that as in the home,
yeah,
being preserved in a freezer. So if you're only allowing a certain amount of fish to be preserved in the freezer, why would we recommend allowing preservation of fish, unlimited amount of preserved fish, by cooking them? Now, I understand there's a thought there that would be simply, I didn't finish eating the fish, but I think that could be interpreted as processing your fish in a cooked manner. It seems confusing to me, yeah, for us just to say unlimited cooked fish.
Cooked fish, yeah. But that was his recommendation, so that was how I wrote it down.
So therefore I would recommend that we do not simply, if we want to say it that way, we want to be very specific. We shouldn't just simply say cooked fish, because that could be interpreted unlimited processed fish,
yeah,
in a manner of cooking them in some form.
Any additional discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, I'm going to call for a vote. All in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand and say aye.
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 Are we voting on only the amendment?
Only the amendment. It's unanimous. Okay, now we're back to the amended motion. Discussion on the motion? Jeffrey.
Keeping in the spirit of being specific, on the walleye inlet closure portion of it, would we? I want to just see if we would need to say, I mean, the walleye period seems open ended, and is there a specific dates that we would need to include in that motion?
I'm pretty sure that the fisheries people have a good idea when the spawn occurs, and they would probably close it a little bit before and a little bit after to be safe. So they can say better than I can. We would have to ask them for specific dates. It's going to change year to year a little bit because of the calendar.
It historically just had a set date, so it included, I think, March and April, and was inclusive of those 2 months, if I'm not mistaken. And it was only a year ago, so we'd go back to those dates, I assume.
So I'm wondering if in our recommendation to the Wildlife Board in a motion, if we need to go back to the historical closure that it was for the last 34 years, or would that leave us open to interpretation?
I think the only interpretation that could happen is that some would say we said the spawn, the division is going to recommend going back. Are they really, how they're going to implement it is they're going to go back to what was in existence before.
Okay.
I think the Wildlife Board would follow that recommendation.
All right. I just wanted to just make sure that we didn't leave ourselves open to a interpretation that rendered our motion moot.
I think we're covered. And we won't have to have another amendment. Discussion on the motion. Jim.
Yeah, I think that I like the motion, but I also want to make it clear that I don't think the walleye fishery will be affected one way or the other by this, and I appreciate the people who have taken the time to come and speak to us, and appreciate their passion. And basically, since we didn't have anybody from the fishing community who wanted the who came here and told us they wanted the inlet open, that maybe it's kind of our responsibility to go with those who are passionate. But at the same time, I don't want the division to think that we're always going to go along with someone just because they're emotional.
John Leonard.
I'm still somewhat troubled by the possession limits in at home, in your freezer, whether they're pickled or bottled or whatever. I'm willing to go along with what was proposed. Under the assumption that division is going to work to rectify that, and so once they're home in your possession, they're reduced to groceries, and you're not subject to 10-ton of cure for an ounce of problem.
I'm sure the division is going to, based upon our motion, and if it passes, they'll be prepared when they get to the Wildlife Board to provide any additional clarification they feel is needed. And I'm getting a yes. So it might not soothe your worries completely, but I'm sure they'll be thinking about what the possibilities are based upon our recommendations today. Jeffrey?
One more bit of discussion about the possession limit. part of the reason why I think it might be a good idea to expand that out a bit is that if a guy comes home with, 2 days worth of trout, that's 10 fish, and he's got five people in his family, well, that's not going to do much. But if he has an extra day to keep them, I mean, if you catch the fish that I catch, you only feed a small child for a half a day. But if you had through an extra day of possession limit, you could keep those small little fish that I catch and maybe make it work. And I'm thinking that's kind of the reason why I think maybe there's a possibility for extending the extra day. Because we don't all catch huge fish.
John?
Still adding to that, I think that we're losing a lot of privacy from our home and our castle, so to speak. And a lot of us fish other states. You go to Alaska, come back with 100 pounds of fish, you're not going to consume those. And how do they know where they were taken? And it's just a can of worms as far as I'm concerned for a very minuscule law enforcement problem. So I just hope that they work diligently and judiciously and rapidly on getting rid of that rule.
John Blazer.
I just had one comment that maybe it's pertinent, maybe it's not, but when you go upland game, upland bird hunting, you have a bag limit and a possession limit. Is that treated any differently than the fish in the freezer? If you had grouse in the fridge or?
Well, with upland game, you have a daily bag limit, but you can only be in possession of 3 times a daily bag limit, either in your freezer or if you're out in the field for 3 consecutive days. So
once I get 6 grouse in my freezer, I'm done for the year, right?
Well, your limit,
unless I eat them really fast.
Limit's 4.
Yeah, your limit's 4, so you could have 12
in
the freezer.
Whatever it is, yeah.
If you know where you can get 12 pheasants, let me know.
I said grouse.
John Leonard.
Big game. You're required to consume all the big game within 1 year?
No. To my knowledge, that's not a requirement. No.
So with big game, you can keep that indefinitely in your freezer.
With the tag.
With a tag. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Any additional discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Chair's going to call for a vote. All in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
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 11-4, opposed? Bruce, would you be willing to state your opposition for the edification of the Wildlife Board?
I'd be happy to. I do not understand the benefit, either a financial benefit for the division or a biological benefit to allowing unlimited possession of wildlife species simply because they've been processed in another manner.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, everyone, for participating tonight and providing your input. And Jim Gaskell has something to say.
Wow. What is it? I just want to make a comment, and certainly not want to make a motion or anything, but a comment that at least a couple of us on the RAC were concerned about the region-specific items. I think sometimes that's appropriate, but I really, for example, am quite interested in Yuba Reservoir. And you could say, well, Gaskell, you can go down to the central region and listen to it, but it's not the same as being on the RAC and having a discussion about that. I think that some of these region-specific items are okay, but I think we need to be really careful about region-specific items that really do apply statewide.
Thank you, Jim. Paul.
You know, I'd second that. Having sat through part of the Central Region RAC yesterday, I think there is some real value, especially in those action items that are region-specific, to be brought to statewide.
So. Thank you. And the council members, especially if you see something that's definitely of interest to you, you should be able to contact the people at the division office to flesh out any information you need, okay? We can always make motions. It might not be as pertinent to the Wildlife Board if we're talking about something in the southeast, but still, we weighed in if you think it's important, okay? So.
Yeah, we can make a motion, and we could weigh in, but we didn't hear the presentation.
Not quite all the information, but if it's really important to you, please pursue it in advance so you have the knowledge.
I move that we go ahead and close the meeting.
We have a motion to adjourn.
Second.
So moved. Thank you, everyone.